It's on the virtues of aging. And as I stand here looking through a glass darkly, in between my cataract surgeries, waiting for clarity to come to vision, both external and internal, I am as aware of the irony as I was in 1969 at Star King Church in Hayward, where I gave a sermon called Don't Be Afraid to Touch While Covered with Poison Oak. This sermon really should be on the virtues of modern medicine, but I'll make it about aging as best I can. We mark our lives with passages, with milestones. They're not necessarily magical. We all know what those milestones are, whether it's first menses for a woman or first sexual experience for either, getting the keys to the car on your 16th birthday when you were of my generation. There are lots of milestones. A wedding ceremony is certainly one of those milestones, not magic acts, where we mark our passages through time. And it struck me that there are a couple of pieces of paper that have caused me to pay attention. One, of course, was the driver's license, that first important piece of paper that I got that gave me freedom, the potential for responsibility, and also the potential to do myself and others very serious damage and injury. It is freedom and mortality all in one piece of paper. The second piece of paper was a marriage license, which again offered opportunities for learning, for growth, for maturity. Then there was that shocking piece of paper when I got my invitation to join ARP. And it was almost like a draft notice. It was, no, not me. What deal can I make? I can't be ready for ARP. I mean, it's just, those are old people. Well, little did I know how young that was when I got that first invitation to ARP. And as my wife goes off at the end of this week to the ARP convention in Las Vegas. Anyway. Then there was the last important piece of paper that I'll see. I'm assuming with my theology that I'm not going to actually read my death certificate. But as close as I could come to doing that as I got my Medicare card. Now, that is a hit upside the head. You know, that says this plausible middle age thing. Well, if 65 is middle, then 130 better be normal. And my math isn't very good, and my understanding of actuarial tables isn't very good, but I don't think it's middle. I think it's a little, there's a slight shift to the old side of it. There are compensations. I thought of about 8 or 9 of them, but at the moment they're all gone. Oh yeah, I get discounts at the movie theater, and the truth is that it's a mixed blessing when you don't have to ask and they just give it to you, and you're going, oh, and when attractive young people just start calling you sir. I've been called worse, but it still is kind of a shock to the system. Aging is something that if you're lucky, you get to do. And if you're not lucky, you don't. And a lot of people look at it as deterioration, look at it as knocking on God's waiting room door, and look at all of the things that we are no longer instead of the things that we are and that we are sometimes better at. Aging does have some tremendous compensations to it. And aging for my generation is different from previous generations, as previous were different from other generations. I would like to think that I'm much younger than my parents were at my age. Well, I know I'm younger than my father was because he'd already been dead for 7 years. So I know that on that marker, I'm in relatively good shape so far. But my generation has different expectations of how we treat ourselves and how we treat our lives, whether it's diet or exercise, the progress that medicine has made in keeping us alive, in keeping us with the possibilities of being healthy, that we, as other generations before, have the possibilities of having knees replaced and hips replaced and hearts and even livers and kidneys replaced, of being fixed and tuned and tucked and liposucked and all different ways that we have of maintaining and preserving ourselves. So when I look at my advanced directive that requests no heroic measures, I've already had heroic measures. I don't even know what that means anymore. I've had heroic measures. I've had spine surgeries and eye surgeries and the miracle of medicine that has prolonged and enriched my life and given me and given you, many of you already, and some of you in the future, the possibilities of growing to maturity. Now, maturity is an interesting word because I don't think that we ever get there. It is part of a life process of growing, of being and becoming who we are, of understanding ourselves and our values and what's important better than we could have in our youth. It is not that I live in terrible denial of how wonderful it was to be young, but I accept some of the changes. My generation is considered to have come to age in the 60s, and we were noted as a drug generation. Now that we are in our 60s, we are a drug generation. I had no idea. Freud talks about the question, are the primary drives to life for pleasure or avoidance of pain? I think I can say without fear of being contradicted, in the 60s, drugs were for pleasure, and in my 60s, drugs are to avoid pain. So I'm still somewhere on that Freudian spectrum. My pharmacopoeia is not as big as a CVS retail space, but it is growing, I am thankful for that. Not entertained by it, but I am thankful for that. When I was young, I denied mortality and feared it at the same time. And I think that fear and denial are usually hand in hand feelings, emotions, ways of being. That when I was young, death was somehow unreal and it was terribly frightening, completely unacceptable, and I just couldn't imagine how human beings ever dealt with our own mortality. And I thought the best way of dealing with it was just not to deal with it and to keep riding my bicycle without a helmet and doing other high-risk activities like living in Southern California and driving on the 60. Those are things that you do with some fear and trepidation if you're at all sane and connected. One of the things about aging that is good is that you have the possibility, not the inevitability, but the possibility of wisdom. Now, you can be smart when you're young, and you can be dumb when you're old. And I'm not looking at anyone in particular, so I don't want any delusions of reference going on here because I can't see you anyway at the moment. But you can't be wise. The greatest compensation of aging is, of course, grandchildren. And that is, part of it is revenge. Part of it is revenge that we get to spoil them and then get to hand them to our formerly rotten kids. But part of it is also that we learn over time when to hold them, when to fold them, when to walk away and when to run. Don't take that literally. I'm not talking about actually folding them. I am taking the part of holding them literally. We learn how important our time, our embrace, our demonstrations of love, not simply our words, are. We also let go of some of the illusion of control that we may have felt with our own children when they were growing up, and how frustrated we got with them and how frustrated we made them when we tried to make them do exactly what we thought we wanted them to do instead of to grow in their own way. Now we have learned, and we get to release not simply the grandchildren through our wisdom, but we also, if we're smart and if we're wise, we don't have to keep telling our children just how smart we are and telling them how to parent also, because you know what? That will frustrate us and frustrate them. It would not have been a possibility outside of our youthful days. But now at least there's the possibility of a mature relationship with our children. As I've grown older, I have become less certain of things, more tolerant of others. The messianic fires of my youth and of Berkeley in the 60s have been banked. The false certainties that were so both comforting and inflaming of my youth have been considerably banked, but it doesn't mean it's time to withdraw, to go away, to leave the world to another generation. I'm not ready for retirement, but I am ready to call my shots differently. I am ready to see a world that still needs me. All this means a world that still needs you, of all of your ages, from I will take the youngest here, and I think I'm going to give you the prize at 94. All of us are still connected to the world, and a world that needs us to fix it, to tune it up. It may be that today my ambitions are not as global to fix everything within my lifetime. My ambitions now are more local and personal, to do what I can do, to use my lights, my vision, my talents to make a difference, not the difference. And again, I go back to my favorite quote from Mother Teresa, which is that greatness is not in doing great things, but in doing small things with great love. The arrogance and condescension that characterized me to an extent with which I am now uncomfortable in my youth has largely faded. And I'm willing to see in others their goodwill even when both our goals and our means are different. I'm willing to really embrace the humanity of the other and of the opposition, and understand that most people are more than decent, and that most people want the good and what is best. And I know it sounds Socratic to say this, but an awful lot of what we do badly in the world comes from misunderstanding what is the good, what is in our interest, the interests of our community, the interests of our planet, and the interests in the world. There are a few psychopaths in the world, but not as many as you would think if you read political rhetoric and the pundits and watch cable. Most people want to make a good difference, and most people can make some difference. No longer having to make the difference is liberating, because we can avoid those arguments that so often distract people. The arguments from whose priorities are absolutely the best. How can you possibly care about ecology when there are hungry people? How can you care about hungry people when there's war? How can you care about war when we're not? I believe that peace starts personally and inside. I believe that social action starts not with simply the signing of a petition, but that signing of a petition has got to be a contract that we make with the future and with a cause. That our words are wonderful as reminders, as rituals and religion are wonderful as reminders, but when they become the replacements for righteous action and engagement in the world and being decent with one another, we miss the fundamentals. As many of you know, one of the articles in my latest book comes from something that my wife repeats a lot. And she says, the fundamental problem with so many fundamentalists of all religions is they forget the fundamentals. The fundamentals of life and of religion are about love and decency and caring for one another, caring for each other's hearts and bodies. Unitarian Universalists are not out to save souls. We're out to save bodies, and people can find their own languages for the nourishment of their souls. But we are out to see the souls in others, to respect the individuality of each person and the commonality of our humanity that ties us together. Once upon a time, when I knew that the Bible was all nonsense, I put it away for a number of years. And when I found it again and studied it again, many of you know that one of the most enriching portions for me is Ecclesiastes, Koheleth, where he talks about what manifests our life. What is life? Everybody who lives is going to die. We don't know what happens next. How do we make this flash of light, whatever may happen next, meaningful? How do we fill it and sanctify it through our acts? And the answer is through our acts. Through eating, I can do that part. Drinking, pretty good at that part. Being merry, can do that too. Share my bread with people I love, absolutely. It's not the chasing of things anymore. It's not the noise. It's not the need to be right. It's the need to find those peaceful places that will nourish me to stay engaged in a world that will outlive me and make actions, the consequences of which I cannot see or even predict, but if they reflect my values, I can feel decent but not certain about them. When I was young and I looked at mortality with a great lack of clarity, I really liked the romanticism of the Dylan Thomas line. Old age should rage against the dying of the light. There was a time when mortality was less real and more threatening. I'm not sure rage is the response now. The light is made more precious because of the sunset. If there were world enough and time enough and no limits to our days and nights and sunsets, the values would be decreased. It is the coming of the sunset and the dying of the light that calls us and reminds us to live today, to express ourselves and our values in our actions today. The sunset, the light dies. The blue fades to pink, to fiery red, and then gently fades to black. It is nature. It is precious. It is life. It is aging. It is mortality. It is a trip which we all share with joy today.